Welcome to another inspirational My Church podcast. We hope that this message will bless and encourage you. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, please visit livelove.ca.
Today, I want to read in Hebrews 12. And this is probably a verse that if you've been in church for any length of time, you've probably heard before. If you've never heard it before, that's totally okay too, because we're going to spend today kind of unpacking this verse and what it means. This is what it says, Hebrews 12, I'm going to read from the NIV. It says, "Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith." I love how the New King James Version puts it. It says, "the author and the finisher of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." And this is the part I want to focus on. "Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, that you will not grow weary and lose heart." So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. God, we thank you for today. We thank you again for an opportunity to worship you in such an incredible environment. And today we're hungry, God. Not just for words, not just for good ideas, but to meet with your presence today, to be encouraged and lifted up and inspired by who you are. And so we just thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, everybody said,
Amen.
So I don't know about you, but for me, life is a series of highs and lows. Maybe you've experienced this, is that there's not too many people, I think, who live through life just at the average. It's a series of really great moments, sometimes followed by really bad moments, and then everything in between. And I found that in life, you can go from hero to zero incredibly quick. Even with my kids, like there's moments where I'll look into my son's eyes and be like it's perfection. I'm like, man, there is no way I can love you anymore. And then there's moments when I look into their eyes and I'm like, there's no way I can love you anymore. Like you're dead to me. Like I can't do this, right? And I don't know if you've experienced, maybe you're not a parent, that's okay. Leave your judgment at the door. We're in church. But I've experienced this, and probably one of the people that I've experienced this the most with is my wife Rebecca. Now, hero to zero. That's the name. Name of the sermon. And I do this too on the flip side of this, but I don't know if this is a guy thing. Maybe this is just a me thing, but I find when I do anything small around the house, like I want a parade thrown in my honor. Like it's like I've taken out the garbage and I moved like one of my own socks, and when she comes home, I'm like, That's how I feel. And so when she comes in and she's just like, wow, you did what you should do. I'm like, I go from hero to zero. I remember though, one of the moments that's most kind of seared my heart is we were still dating at the time. And you're not going to believe this, but I'm not a very sentimental person. I'm about as sentimental as Clint Eastwood is funny. And so it's like, I'm not super sentimental, and so for me, buying gifts or doing things romantically, like I'm not that guy. But I really, really liked her, and I was like, man, I want to do something different. Like I'm gonna put myself out there, and it's gonna be amazing. And so I was in Nova Scotia at an arts and crafts festival. First mistake, and I thought to myself, I am going to find the perfect gift for Rebecca. And so I literally went around, I scoured all the places, checked the price, of course, but. Can't get the Maritimer out of me, but I'm looking around and I'm trying to find something, and finally I landed on this necklace. It was this leather necklace with a blue dolphin with a blue dolphin on the bottom. Now, if this was 1998 and she was 13 years old, this would have been fire, but unfortunately it was neither of those things. And so I got this blue dolphin on this leather necklace, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm playing this out when I give it to her. It's gonna be like, oh my God, like, I can't believe it. Blue dolphin on a necklace, like, how did you know? How am I so blessed? Man, there is a God. Like, that's where my head was at. And so I went up and I came home from Nova Scotia, like, hey, you know, I got something for you. And she loves gifts. She's like, oh, okay, that's amazing. And so I pull it out, and she opens up this necklace. And it was like, she looks at the necklace, looks at me, puts it right down, thanks. And that's it. I'm like, I'm just like crushed in that moment. Hero to zero. Maybe you can appreciate that. But I think so often in life, it's a series of highs and lows. And how quick can we move from a moment of success, from a moment of victory, to discouragement and despair? And this is what I find in life, is that courage is hard to find, but disappointment, discouragement is so easy to catch. And even sometimes on the heels of one of the greatest wins in our lives, I find myself struggling with discouragement. And I think that so often in life, we'd love to pretend that it doesn't exist, and yet so often it seems like there's this cloud that's just on the other side of something great to bring you down again. How do we deal with discouragement? Maybe you're facing off with some discouragement today. Maybe it's discouragement when it comes to your family situation, and you're just trying to work out relationships with the kids. Maybe it's with a spouse. And eat all of those advancements to try to move the family forward, to bring the family closer together, keep seeming like they're just off in the distance. Maybe you're coming in discouraged about how school went, and on the other side of those exams, it looks like you might be facing some of the same courses again the next semester. Maybe it's with a career advancement, and you're feeling discouraged about this prospect of trying to either find a job or maybe move into something that you want and something that you love. But I think we all face discouragement. I felt strongly as I was even writing this sermon that there's some people who are discouraged when it comes to love. And you're trying to find that perfect somebody. You're trying to find that relationship. And yet it doesn't seem like you can find it. There's things in this life that can bring us down and discourage us. You know, this church that this author of Hebrews is writing to is no exception to the rule. In fact, this church had actually undergone such severe persecution that it's thinking about disbanding. People are ready to throw in the towel. And so the writer of this letter tries to make a petition to say, no, stick it out. Keep going. Keep persevering. There's something more on the other side. And yet, even in the middle of this story is a discouraged community of people. And yet this author tries to write it and brings it together. And what I love about Hebrews 12 is that what the author does is he says, look at Jesus. Look at what he's done. Look at this author and finisher of our faith. When we look at him, there's something about him that can give us courage for the moment. There's something about him that can keep us going when it doesn't feel like we have anything left to give. There's something about him that when we've lost all heart, he can bring something new into our lives. And that's really what I want to explore today, is how do we deal with discouragement? How do we deal with discouragement? Today, what I want you to do is, especially if you are taking notes, maybe even write some of the things that you're discouraged about. And we're going to start to filter them through what the Bible ultimately says and what I believe God's trying to encourage you with today. Sounds good? Yeah. Awesome. So if you're taking notes, write this down. Discouragement runs with destiny. Discouragement runs with destiny. So I think sometimes there's this kind of implicit bias, is that if I'm doing well in life, there's going to be less adversity in my life. If I'm doing something really well, if I'm really achieving and reaching whatever it is God's called me to, then there's actually going to be less resistance in my life. And I think we even see this online, whether you're, you know, watching like Ty Lopez and like the Jet, and he's like, hey, I made it, guys. Like, you could do this too. You're looking at like Gary Vaynerchuk, whoever it is. You know, there's this narrative that says once you've arrived, it doesn't look like there's too much resistance. And yet I think it's actually the opposite. The opposite is true. And, you know, even when you think about it from a working out perspective, you know, I'm horrible at working out. Like, I have the motivation, like, the internal strength of, like, a two-year-old. Like, if I try running with my brothers, it's like I go around the block, and I'm just like, all right, I'll see you guys at home. Like, good work. I'm just going to stick to prayer. Like, I don't have the motivation to do it. And yet, I think in our culture, when we see resistance, when we feel resistance, we go, it must not be good. Let's stop doing whatever we're doing so we don't feel that resistance. And yet this is what I know, is that discouragement is actually intertwined with destiny. And actually, a lot of the times where you feel the most deepest discouragement probably means you're on the edge of what God has for you. Let me explain. Let's look at the Israelite community. In Exodus, this is what it says. It says, therefore, so basically, if you don't know the story, Moses has come and God's spoken to him and said, look, you're going to free these people from slavery, from bondage, from oppression. So Moses goes, he goes to the Pharaoh and says, hey, by the way, your whole like slave force, we're all leaving. And so the Pharaoh's like, yeah, sure. No, he's like, no, I'm not doing that. Like, you're not doing it. And so he basically tells them at this point, now you're going to work overtime. You're going to work double time, just so you know that I'm in control. Listen to what God says, though, in the midst of that. He says, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I'll free you from being slaves to them. I'll redeem you, and with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I'll take you as my own people and be your God, and you will know that I'm the Lord your God who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians, and I will bring you to the land I swore with an uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I'll give it to you as a possession. I'm the Lord. And listen to the report. Moses reported this to the Israelites, but they didn't listen to him because of their discouragement from the harsh labor. So now we have 50-50, or we have 20-20. We know the end of the story. We know that these guys are on the edge of one of the most incredible, like, freeing of slaves. Like, this is an incredible story and moment, and yet in the middle of their discouragement, they can't see the bigger picture of what God's doing. And I think so often in life, this is where we are. We sit on the edge of discouragement, not realizing the bigger story that God is trying to weave and tell to encourage us. And so if I can encourage you with this, maybe your discouragement is actually in the middle of God's plan to develop you. Listen to what it says in Peter 4:12. He says, dear friends, don't be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come to test you, as though although this is something strange that's happening to you. And yet I think when we feel discouraged, we feel like the only ones. We feel like there's no way that anybody else is dealing with this. There's no way that I've made it this far and I still feel this way. Did you know, though, at Paul, at the end of his ministry, as he's writing his final letter to Timothy, was actually dealing with discouragement. He's going, man, this person has left me and this person has left me, but I've run the good race and I've fought the good fight. And so in the middle of him, at the end of his ministry, doing and running the good race, he's still feeling discouragement from all the other things happening. See, discouragement is sometimes right in the middle and intertwined with destiny. It's how we deal with it that matters. So if we keep reading in 1 Peter 4:12, it says in verse 13, but rejoice inasmuch as you participate in the sufferings of Christ, that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. So every moment of resistance is actually an opportunity to show God's glory. Every moment of your discouragement might be an opportunity for God to do something new and fresh in your life, for you to see more of who Jesus is. Like, think about it. When David was discouraged by his brothers, he was on the edge of the battlefield of something great with Goliath. Right? When Moses was looking and trying to free these people and they were discouraged, they were on the edge of being free. When Paul was writing to Timothy saying, I've run the good race, I fought the good fight, he was on the edge of what God had for him. And over again, we see in the Bible that where there's discouragement, there's actually destiny. And so if I can encourage you today, is maybe that place of discouragement, locate it and see that the story's not over, that God's still in control, that he's still writing something new, that he's still doing something new and fresh in your life. And just like in Peter, don't be surprised about it, but realize he's working in and through it. Resistance doesn't have to be a bad thing. Joshua, he was discouraged on the edge of the promised land. Think about his story. Literally, God in Joshua 1 goes up to him and says, look, don't be discouraged. Don't be afraid. I'm with you. And I just think on the edge of some of our promises is often sometimes some of the greatest discouragement. If you don't want to live a life with discouragement, don't live. Don't take risks. Don't step out in faith. Because every moment where you position yourself to do something for God, there will be resistance, there will be adversity. But we have to realize, and Paul uses the imagery often throughout 1 Corinthians and all over the place, of an athlete. When you're an athlete, you're literally creating resistance. That's what happens when you're working out. You're creating resistance in your muscles, but at the same time, it makes you stronger. It propels you forward. And so maybe we have to stop looking at discouragement as a be-all and end-all and see it as a vehicle for God to do something new and fresh in our lives. You know, as well, though, and this is a point that I really want to sit on, is to deal with discouragement, we deal with discouragement through encouragement. We deal with discouragement through encouragement. We've heard Pastor Caleb preach about this. What is encouragement? It's literally, if you take like the etymology of it, it's putting courage back in someone. And I think when we think about life, there is so many people in life that will say the facts. There's so many people around ready to say the truth, you know, the facts of the situation. I think we need more people speaking the God factor into the situation, speaking potential into the situation. Listen to what Paul said in 2 Corinthians. So this is in one of his ministry journeys, and he's kind of recounting this moment. And he says, even when we came into Macedonia, our body had no rest at all, but we were troubled in every way, struggles from the outside, fears from within. Now, right off the bat, I actually find that encouraging, oddly enough, that if the one of the greatest authors of the New Testament, like in and through his ministry, felt discouragement, it means that we're all human. It means that we're doing okay. But listen to what he says. He says, but God, who encourages the downhearted, encouraged us by the arrival of Titus. We were encouraged not only by his arrival, but also by the encouragement you gave him as he reported to us your longing, mourning, and your deep concern for me that I rejoiced more than ever. So we get this story. We see this moment that Paul is kind of unveiling this vulnerable moment, saying, look, I was feeling pressure from the outside. I was feeling fear within. And yet there was this encouragement that breathed new life into his situation. Thank God that Titus was there to speak encouragement into Paul. But I wonder who might be saying, thank God, whoever was there to speak encouragement into you. Thank God that that person was speaking life and potential at your worst moment. And I just think that we as a church have the opportunity not just to receive encouragement, but to be encouraging. Because what does ultimately encouragement do? I think it points out faith. You know, there's a lot of people who like to look for causality in life. And there's nothing wrong with that. But listen to this one excerpt from Job. Now, if you don't know the story of Job, he was a guy in the Bible, and he comes under extreme hardship. He loses everything, his fortune, his family. And so he's in this situation, and he has these friends who come around and try to counsel him. And they basically say, look, here's the reason why all of this has happened. You are obviously did something wrong in your life, and so God is hating on you, and there's all these bad things. And ultimately, that's not the story of Job. I encourage you to read the whole thing, but listen to what Job says in rebuts to one of these guys. He says, Job spoke again. I've heard all of this before. What miserable comforters you are. Okay. You won't even stop blowing hot air. What keeps you talking? Like, now he's going like rap feud. Like, it's just like, it's getting real. So he says, I could say the same things if you were in my place. I could spout off criticism and shake my head at you. But if you were me, I would encourage you. I try to take away your grief. Now, I'm not saying that breaking down somebody's life and helping them grow and finding moments where they need to be bigger is a bad thing. But I just don't think that that's the remedy for discouragement. And I don't think it's the remedy for changing deeply. You know, Job is giving and alluding to, at my worst, when I feel the most discouraged, I need somebody to put encouragement back in me. Yeah. And I wonder for you, maybe who are the people or where are the opportunities in your life where you can put encouragement into somebody? Because what are we ultimately doing when we encourage? We're using the greatest weapon, the most creative weapon that we have, and that's our words. Like when you really think about it, think about Hebrews 11. So just before this, it says in Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand the universe was created by what? By the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. See, our words are literally the scaffolding for the future. Our words have creative potential. And so what are you speaking into the people around you? Are you speaking death? Are you speaking not good enough? Maybe that's what's been spoken over you. Not good enough, not smart enough, not advanced enough, not fast enough, not intelligent, whatever it is for you. I think that there's words that have been spoken that start to shape our future. And I think one of the greatest transformative tools that we have as the church is to be the type of people who speak faith, who speak the God factor. How does God view your situation? How does God view you? That you're more than enough, that you have peace, that you have comfort, that you're loved, that you're valued, that you're cherished, that you have an identity, that you're not your worst day, but you're your best day. I think that's what we have. And yet I think so often we withhold encouragement. We withhold the greatest tool that we have to bring life and courage back to people's hearts. And I just think that the church ought to be the most encouraging place. Because this is the one place where we know our Creator and we know how intently and how intensely He loves us, how much He thinks about us. And so this ought to be a place that exemplifies that heart towards every person, that interactions are seasoned with the God potential on people's life, that interactions are seasoned with the potential that each and every single person holds. That's where community becomes a beautiful place, and where Sunday just doesn't become another cog in the wheel of your week, but it becomes a place where you can find renewed faith, renewed hope, and the courage to keep continuing in your race. Encouragement is the language of faith. And this is the thing, and this is a sub-point of this, is that we ought to encourage at every opportunity. So again, if we go back to this church, this Hebrew church, he says, look, encourage each other daily as long as it's called today. So he's being emphatic in Hebrews 3. The writer says, encourage each other daily as long as it's called today. See, we have a responsibility to be in each other's lives, to be encouraging each other. And he looks at this church that's weak, that's discouraged, that's been beat down, and says, your remedy for your discouragement is actually encouragement. But it's not something that can happen once in a while. Think about it. The average person has around 20,000 thoughts in a day, or they're exposed to 20,000 thoughts and symbols or messages from all around. Man, I want some of those to be encouraging ones. I want some of those not just saying what I don't have, but actually what I do have in Jesus. I want some of those to say what Jesus has called me to, what God thinks of me. And I just think that as a church, we have that opportunity. But for you, what are the opportunities in your life? Where are the opportunities to speak encouragement into your situations? What are the opportunities to maybe speak encouragement when it comes to your career or whatever you're facing off with when it comes to working out career things? What's your opportunity when it comes to speaking encouragement into your family members? And this is the thing, is I think so often we'll hear this and go, man, yeah, that's amazing. I hope somebody encourages me. I think one of the greatest things that you can do is start to encourage somebody else. That in your moment of deepest discouragement, one of the greatest things you can do is actually act countercultural and start to give. And this is the thing, is that's the paradox of our faith, like I said before, is that Jesus even says this, is when you try to save your life, you lose it. When you lose your life, you save it. And I wonder for you, if in your discouragement, and I'm not saying that that's an easy thing to do, and I'm not trying to belittle your moment or what you're going through. I understand in a room this size, there's some real things. It's not just like, oh man, I got the wrong coffee order at Starbucks. Like, I get that. But what if you started just in a small way to create the space and to take the faith to not make it about yourself for a moment and to see potential in somebody else? And this is the crazy thing about that, is when we start to do that, that's when the grace of God really starts to take root in our lives. And see, there's always this kind of wondering of, am I going to be taken care of? If I give, am I really going to be taken care of? And I don't know how to prove it to you. I don't know how to say it, but I just know you will. Because that's what Jesus talks about. That's the upside down way of the kingdom, is when we decide to encourage, something happens not just in them, but it also happens in us. So I wonder, how can you start to encourage? And that's the thing, is encouragement, it's actually not personality driven. It's not purpose driven, it's just a grace. I think there's a lot of people who won't encourage until there's something deemed worthy of encouragement. Man, I'm not going to encourage my spouse right now. They don't deserve it. I'm not going to encourage my kid. They don't deserve it. I'm not going to encourage my boss. They don't deserve it. And so often we'll look at the personality and we'll look at the output, and yet I think deep and lasting change actually comes when we just start to encourage with no strings attached. See, that's the generosity of the Christian tradition. That's the generosity of the church. That's the very grace and heart of God, is that in the moment where you feel like somebody's not worthy, like they shouldn't be taking, when we give, that's what actually starts to change people. And I wonder for you, who can you be an encouragement to? You know, because there's a lot of people, when you think about the power of words, words are things that, you know, after this service, you know, you might go to the park, you might go home, you might go to a restaurant. But because of words, there's actually places that some people can't go. There's things that some people can't do because of words that have been spoken. I'm not going to try when it comes to my education. I've been told too many times I don't have it. I'm not going to put another resume in. There's just no point. And because of things that have been spoken, words that have been said, doors are closed to people's lives. I just think that we ought to be the type of people who find every opportunity we have, who find every moment that we have to say, I'm going to speak new life, new potential, new faith, new hope, new inspiration into each and every person's life that I encounter, that I talk to, that I rub shoulders with. And I think that's why the writer of Hebrews, when he looks at this church, says, no, 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 guys, don't just encourage when you feel like it. Don't just encourage based on somebody's personality. Don't just encourage based on what you're going through, but find the potential in somebody's life and speak into it. And it changes things. This is my last point, is continue. Just continue. Man, I'm getting some encouragement up in here right now. Come on. Just continue. Come on, yeah, yeah. He had some attitude when he did it. But just continue. Just keep going. Just keep going. Okay, this is an important point. So listen up. Listen up. All right. This is actually important. I really want you guys to get this. You know, I think that there's some times in life where somebody's not available to encourage you. There's moments in life where you're just not accessible. And I know I've even gone through in my life moments of discouragement where there's nobody to text me. I'm not in a church lobby. I'm not hanging out with my friends. What do we do in those moments? What do we do in the moments where encouragement falls flat? Sometimes it does. What do we do in the moments where you just can't see that you're on the edge and you're hearing all of this going, okay, yeah, that's great. I'm on the edge of something great. Okay, yeah, that's great. Like, there's encouraging people, and yet I don't feel encouraged right now. And sometimes it's just not enough to kick the feeling. What do we do in those moments? And I love the writer of Hebrews. So in Hebrews 3, this writer says, look, encourage each other daily. So he's trying to show these people, and all throughout Hebrews, I can't do justice summarizing a book as complex as Hebrews, but you can start to see that he's trying to show the supremacy of Jesus all throughout this whole book and all these chapters, and he comes up to Hebrews 11, and this is an interesting part of Hebrews. Now, again, if you haven't read it, it's all good, but basically he goes through person after person, character after character in the Bible who did extremely amazing and great things. So he starts going through and listing all these people. He says, look, because of Abel's faith, he had a sacrifice that was acceptable. He then looks at Abraham and says, because of Abraham's faith, even though he couldn't see that he was going to have a child because he was too old, I mean, all of these amazing things happened, and then he ended up having a child. And then because of his faith, he was willing to sacrifice this child, and then God came through. And then he starts talking about Moses. Man, because of Moses' faith, he was able to see these people freed. And then he looks at David and says, man, because of David's faith, look at all this crazy stuff that happened. He killed Goliath. He became a king. And there was this generation of prosperity in Israel. And he keeps going and going and going and telling all of these incredible stories. And then in Hebrews 12, this is what it says. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us to the sin that so easily entangles us. But then listen to what it says after that. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. So this writer, he looks and he goes through person after person after person, story after story after story. But the interesting thing for me in this is that he looks at all of them and he says, so since we're surrounded by such an incredible group of people who have done incredible things, let's look at Jesus. But see, but catch this. I think so often in life what we'll do, if we really like kind of looked at what I've been saying all up to this point, there's nothing distinct that the Christian religion, that faith offers up to this point. I mean, if you're believing in discouragement and you're discouraged, you're on the edge of something, that's universal to everybody. You know, encouragement, speaking words of life, that's universal to everyone. But there's one distinctive that faith has. And he says that all of these people are pointing to one person. See, the world, the greatest thing that the world can do is draw inspiration. We can look at these stories. We can look at these people and feel encouraged and try to gain courage from their stories, to try to look at their lives and go, wow, there's some inspiration in their lives that we can draw from. And yet in the Christian tradition, we're not just looking from inspiration, although that's good to do. We actually have salvation. And see, these stories aren't about people trying to push through their own efforts to be able to show how much they were able to do. And because they thought something and did all of the right steps and made all of the right actions, then they were okay. But it actually just points to a more simple truth, is that in our moment of greatest opposition and adversity, in the moment where we have nothing left to give, that's where we look for a savior. And I don't think it's as much about finding inspiration from all of these incredible people, but realizing that all of these incredible people just found a savior who they were willing to trust in. And see, where the world stops at being inspired by somebody, and I think inspiration's great, but I've had some discouragement that goes way past inspiration. I think one of the greatest things we can do is remember that we don't just have inspiration, we have salvation. In that everything in your life, everything you're facing off with, no matter how deep, no matter how cutting, no matter how hard, is still encircled in a greater hope, in a story that's already been said, in a story that's already been written. Listen to what Jesus said. In John 16, he's talking to his disciples, and he's alluding at the fact that he's going to leave them, that he's going to die on the cross. Listen to what Jesus says in John 16. He says, the time's coming, and in fact it's come, when you will be scattered, each to your own home, and you'll leave me all alone. And yet I'm not alone, for my Father's with me, and I've told you these things so that in me you might have peace. This world will have trouble, but take heart, for I've overcome the world. Take heart, for I've overcome the world. And all of these stories, all of these people point to Jesus. Think about David. The story of David isn't about him trying to muster up the courage to be able to do something. When he was discouraged by his brother, it actually says he went in the valley. Jesus actually didn't just go into a valley, he went into a valley of death. And it actually wasn't because of David's weakness, but through David's weakness that he got victory. And Jesus made himself weak, didn't defend himself, and died so that he could have victory. See, these stories don't point to our capacity to change our lives, our capacity to get out of discouragement, but they point to the supremacy of Jesus and what he can only do through his salvation. In those moments, these stories point to the fact that Jesus has overcome the world. You know, I look at my own son. He freaks out when I take his cars. He loves cars. He's an addict. I'm scared. But when I take a toy to fix it, he freaks out. He's angry. He's upset. He throws punches now. I don't know what I'm going to do about it. Pray for me. But he loses his mind. And yet, for me, I'm just working it out. I know how the story ends. See, this author is saying, no, Jesus knows how the story ends. When we keep our eyes on him, he's the author and finisher of our faith. He's worked it out. He's overcome that situation in your career. He's overcome that situation in your marriage. He's overcome that situation in your love life. He's overcome that situation in your family. So in light of that, we can know with confidence, if there's a God who's overcome the world, then I don't need discouragement, but I can find confidence in him. I don't know if you get it. Listen to what it says in Hebrews. It says, so take a new grip. This is in Hebrews 12. This is the encouragement. He says, take a new grip with your tired hands and strengthen your weak knees. I think there's some people in here who need to take a new grip on their life, who need to take a new grip with those tired hands, realizing it's not about what you've got left in the tank. It's actually about what Jesus is doing in and through you. Man, maybe you need to take a new grip in your marriage. Maybe you need to take a new grip in your family. Maybe you need to take a new grip with your finance. Maybe you need to take a new grip when it comes to finding comfort. Maybe you need to take a new grip when it comes to finding peace, because God has overcome. And now when we read this, it makes a little bit more sense. Since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, people who just decided to step out in faith, people who just decided, I need a savior. I can't do this on my own. Let us throw off everything that so easily entangles us. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out, fixing our eyes on Jesus. You know, there's no promise that you'll always be aware of God's presence, but that doesn't mean that there's still not the promise that God's presence will always be with you. And I just think sometimes the greatest thing that you can do is just continue. Just keep going. When you don't have any faith left, just keep believing and keep your eyes fixed on his salvation. And I think the moment when we start to locate God's salvation, how he's overcome in those situations of our lives, it can give us the courage when we've got nothing left in the tank. So maybe for you, you just need to start to locate in your life, man, in my career, wait a second, no, God's worked this out. His promises are more than enough. Okay, in my marriage, man, if God could bring together a broken humanity, if he already knows the beginning and the end, maybe there's still hope for me. And that's the one distinctive that the world doesn't have. We can encourage, and that's good. We can gain inspiration, and that's good. We can realize that on the edge of opposition, that destiny and discontentment, destiny and discouragement actually run hand in hand, and that's all good. But the one thing we have is a hope that he's worked it out, is a hope that you don't have to worry, but that God is working in and through you.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, visit our website. And if you'd like to support the ministry of My Church financially, you can do so by following the giving link at livelove.ca. Thank you for partnering with us. We pray this message has blessed and encouraged you.